pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Beckman?
Here.
Commissioner Zradnik?
Present.
Commissioner Helmer?
Here.
Commissioner Kelly?
He's here too.
Here.
Mr. Borstein?
Yes, ma'am.
And Commissioner DiGiovanni?
Here.
Thank you.
Okay, item three, this is open period for public participation, a chance for any person of the public to address the commissioners for up to 2 minutes on items that are on our agenda this evening. Seeing none, we'll move on to item four. But first, I'd like to make approve an adjustment to the agenda by moving item seven up to follow the consent calendar.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Item four, we'll take one motion to pass all items 4A through 4F on the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay. Okay, item seven. This is the CMSA Student Internship Program. And we have a recommendation to receive the internship program report and consider compensating the student interns. So,
okay. Thank you. So CMSA has been working with student interns since the late 1990s. And there's been different programs since that period of time. First, we had a program with UC Berkeley. Then we had a program with SRJC. Then recently we launched a high school internship program. And then we're hoping in the future to start a lab internship program with Dominican University. We'll talk about, a little about each of these in a moment. So I've talked to a couple board members over the last year about just high-level information about our internship programs. And in discussions with them, we thought it would be a good idea to give the board kind of more of a summary update, because I don't think we've ever done that before. Just in passing, here's these programs we have, and it might be included in one of our annual reports or not. I don't even remember that. But they've been great programs. They've been very successful. It's been, you know, really a win-win for the agency and the students. For our staff, we had, you know, some youthful folks around here with all this energy that were willing to learn, and it gave them the ability to mentor, you know, the students and train them about our facilities and operations, which was invaluable for them for their, you know, career development or think about a career in the future. And it was good for the students, and they appreciated it. And so tonight we're going to give this, you know, updates, and one of the recommendations is to consider compensating, you know, student interns, and we'll talk about them in a few minutes. So back in March of 2017, I believe it was a consent calendar item, we had an administrative policy pertaining to internship program guidelines. So it talked about the programs, paid and unpaid, and it had a lot of specific procedures of how we outreached into the schools and advertised for the interns, how we, you know, select interns, and a little bit about, you know, appraising them, monitoring their performance, things of that nature. And that was approved by the board as administrative policy. We've been utilizing that. And a little bit about one of the programs. So the first one we started up was the with the University of California, Berkeley's College of Engineering through the Office of Cooperative Education. And in that program, students, engineering students, go to that office in the College of Engineering. They could look at different, you know, state or regional or local agencies that were looking for interns. They could have their fill an application, have it sent to the agencies, and get internships. Great program at Cal. I'm not sure if they still have that. So between like 1988 and 1993, CMSA brought in a student intern for the fall and the spring semester. And the intern acted as like an extension of staff. Was paid about $12 to $13 an hour. And at that time, we had, you know, the agency was just built a few years before, so there was, like, you know, a lot of little studies that were done and some minor design work, some small equipment installation projects that the interns helped out with. Then in the fall of 1993, the agency developed its first, you know, multi-year capital program. And based on the activities that were projected out of that, agency decided, well, we need to staff up an engineering, bring a full-time engineer on, and they discontinued the program with UC Berkeley at that time. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I'm the last intern from that program with UC Berkeley. And I was hired in December of 93 as an engineering technician here.
What's your position currently?
Oh, assistant engineer. Anyway, so we had that.
So it works.
It worked out pretty good, that program, for me. But so our plant manager, Chris Fenton, is here. He's going to tell you a little bit about the ongoing program with SRJC and the high school internship program that started up this last summer. So Chris Fenton, our plant manager.
All right. Well, thank you, Jason. And I want to thank you all for providing me with the opportunity to give you a little bit of information about our internship programs here.
Yes, sir. Just because we're on the camera, can you just maybe come up here? Because there's a camera there.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll stand over here so it's not too awkward for anybody.
Yeah.
So a little bit of history with Santa Rosa Junior College. We've had a program 21 years with the Santa Rosa JC program. How their program works typically is that students from their program will come here for between 1 and 2 semesters, and they're typically gaining college credit for their internships completed. Or folks that have completed the program there, they'll come here and then they'll get work experience hours and apply that towards their operator certification. So when they do come here, they work alongside agency staff members. We work them through the 3 technical work groups. They work with the operators, they go through the maintenance department, and they work with technical services, which is made up of engineering and our laboratory and environmental services folks over there. So they work with all the groups. It gives them kind of a well-rounded idea or core, you know, of what our core business is. And oftentimes we find that these interns it helps them focus or narrow their career paths by being able to rotate throughout the work groups. So, you know, that works for them. Also, we're an industry member of the Santa Rosa JC's Water, Wastewater Technical Advisory Committee. So what that is an advisory panel made up of industry professionals and faculty members at the JC, and we look at curriculum, and we also advise on course syllabus. So if there's changes in the industry, we kind of help guide that for them there as well. So that's the other thing that we do there. As noted in the staff report, we currently have 3 SRJC internship folks that were in the internship program. Myself, that's why I remember they had a 21-year relationship with them. And then our operations supervisor, John St. Louis, and one of our operators, newer operators, Abraham Clark. So they're here with us as well. Like Jason had mentioned a little earlier, we feel that this program also helps our staff. It identifies hidden talent. You know, they have to speak, they teach, and they develop leadership skills. So, you know, it's a win-win for us as well. Moving on to the high school program, as also mentioned in the board report, Mr. Borrow was instrumental in getting CMSA and Marin County Office of Education, specifically their schools to careers coordinators together. So we met, the coordinators put us in contact with guidance counselors from Tam Valley and the San Rafael School District. We kind of talked with them and explained the types of internships that we could provide to their students, not only the science, technology, engineering, and math students, but also vocational arts as well. We wanted to make sure that they understood that we could provide those as well. So one of the things that we have learned since implementing the high school program is that high school students, their calendars don't necessarily align with our schedules here. So we've extended our program into the summertime to allow them more opportunities to work with our staff. To date, we've had 2 interns from the high schools here. Our current intern, his name is Jamie Miller. He's from Redwood High School. He's asked to stay on through the summer and work with our engineering group specifically. So, he's a good kid, and we said, yeah, sure, stay on, and we'd love to work with you. And then just to kind of also follow up in the staff report, we completed an onboarding packet for interns. We completed that in July of 2017. And then recently we've revised that to also incorporate the high school students as well. With that, I'll turn it back over to Jason.
Oh, I have a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
The high school students are not paid interns.
currently.
Are we asking the high school students to be paid interns?
It would be student our thought would be student interns that didn't have required internship as part of their college degree or certification program. So high school and in college.
Okay, so in other words, if they're doing this during college for college credits, that's really they're getting the benefit of the college credit. So what you're saying is anybody who's not getting college credit, we'd like to consider paying the interns at that point.
That's our thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's our thoughts, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Were you paid when you were here as an intern?
No,
were
no, you? I was not.
Yes, I was $13 an hour. And that was
$13 an hour back in 1991?
I was like, wow. Oh, yeah. The shit I got. Okay.
I came strictly for the college credit.
Okay.
So you that, yeah, that's, you know, so I chose credit in lieu of cash at that point.
Okay.
So.
And
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I have one more because that made me think about it. So there was college in lieu of credit. How did the plan work when back in the day? So
what do you mean, as in like?
Well, compared to what's,
I can only speak of when I started here. Right. There really wasn't a path for students to get here, at least from my perspective. Okay. So I worked with Jason. He was, you know, and we developed a program that kind of laid out a path. So kids knew how to come to us, or you know that we were an option for them. So you know, I kind of just fumbled into it. I met a couple of folks roaming through the halls of school at night and asked them what they were doing there, you know, and what my program was. And they're all, well, we're taking these classes and we want to work on our certifications as an operator. I go, oh, okay. And then I turned around the next semester and I kind of took a class to see what it was about. And I'm all, hey, this is pretty good, you know. I can raise a family and move on if I wanted to do that. So that's kind of what got me into the program. But then also I got interested when I got the supervisory level. Well, there's really no path for these kids to get here, because I don't know if you know, but like I'm an operator, grade five now. You can't work in a treatment plant without an operations license. You can't get a license without working in a plant. So it's kind of a catch-22. So that's kind of what started me trying to figure out a way to help folks, you know, navigate that piece of the state puzzle there, so to speak. So
somewhere it seems like we kind of fell off the tracks, because there was a paid and a college program back a long time ago, and now there's no paid program at all.
The UC Berkeley program was the College of Engineering would let you take 6 months off from school to do the internship, but the internship wasn't a requirement of the college. It was just something you could do just to, you know, get that, you know, work experience, help guide you in a path in general civil engineering, and then you'd have that for your resume also. So it was really beneficial for the student, but it wasn't required. And at that time, I wasn't involved with any of those discussions, and I don't think there's any history of it, you know, but they decided to pay, you know, the college engineering student interns from UC Berkeley.
Well, we haven't done that in years.
Yeah, there was one engineering intern that we paid, and that was Patty Garbrino contacted me, and she asked if we had this internship for this engineering, chemical engineering student, who was the son of the woman that wrote Joe Garbrino's autobiography.
Oh, okay.
Her biography, yes. And I said, well, we'll have him come down. And he was, you know, a student. He went from chemical engineering to finance, and he decided he didn't want to be in the finance world anymore, so he wanted to get back into engineering. So he came in to the agency, unpaid, but he was just so knowledgeable and producing such good work, we decided, let's bring him on full-time for a while and just pay him, like $20 an hour. So he was happy to get back into the field, get some experience, and then after several months, we paid him. And that was a decision I just made, because we didn't have any policies or anything associated like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Chris. That was really great.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an overview of our program. And Chris, would you like to talk about the Dominican University connection there?
I did engineering at UC Berkeley, where they gave me 2 years of foreign language requirement for speaking Fortran. I never had to take an English class there because... Many years later, I decided I went back to Dominican and got a degree in humanities, emphasis in religious studies, music, and mathematics. And so Dominican is near and dear to my heart. It's an amazing jewel of a place that we have within our JPA here. And many years ago, I met Ken Frost because we swim together. He swims in a lane that's really fast in the middle of the pool, and I sit at the end of the lane and talk. But we many years ago had a discussion about wouldn't it be fun to do this kind of a thing with Dominican University right in the middle of where we are. And recently, we purchased that too many digesters, 300 gallons each.
That's right, yeah.
300 gallons each, and they're motoring their way across the country right now as we speak, I believe.
That's right.
And they're going to get here, and I had mentioned to Jason and some of the staff a long time ago, wouldn't it be fun if, you know, we could get a student involved with that? And they reminded Jason that I had said such a thing, and I spoke with Ken over Dominican, and here we are. So.
Yeah, so we have the the digestion equipment arriving on Monday. We're going to set it all up, and we'll have like a 9-month digester pilot study. And recently, at one of our kind of executive team meetings, we were talking about the extra resources we'd need to do all the work associated with the study. And then we started talking about the lab internship with Dominican University based on what Michael had mentioned in the past. And our new lab director has been talking about having lab interns at some point. So it kind of all came together perfectly. So then got to go with Michael and Ken last week and talked about it, and he thought it would be great for his students. Then we've talked about having more of a long-term internship program with the university where each semester, a student or two can come in and part-time work in the laboratory and get some, field experience and learn how to grab samples, learn about, wastewater operations process, learn all the standard methods for doing the different types of lab analyses we're certified for. That'd be good for the students. It'd be a good resource, for our staff. And then some of our staff in the laboratory and environmental services group, they could, benefit just like the operations people did with, mentoring and teaching the interns. So that's something that's kind of evolving. So in terms of the recommendation to compensate the student interns, so you've seen the staff report recommending $15 to $22 range depending on their experience and what qualifications they have. And if the board, is agreeable to that, what we'd do is we'd get together an executive team, we'd figure out what's the most kind of equivalent FTEs we'd have in a year, and then based on that, we would, plug in a budget number and we'd bring that to our finance committee on April 24th to discuss that. If it was agreeable with them, we would put a separate internship account in the admin department budget. So we're looking just for some discussion from the board tonight and authorization to pay student interns. Chris and I are talking about the criteria that they're not getting college credits for it. And if that salary range or a modification makes sense, then we'll figure out the annual not-to-exceed cost and bring that to the finance committee in a couple weeks at our meeting.
I'd support that.
You go ahead.
I think it's a great idea. Ready to go.
Yeah, I'm all for paying students of either high school or college level if they're not getting credit or if they're not getting their operator certification hours. I think it's only right, and it really helps people, students out with their pocketbook as well. And so how many positions are do you sort of have a feel for? We have Mr. Frost here with Dominican. Is there a big interest? Are we talking 4 or 5 people that are really interested, you see? Or
I heard one.
Plus just one?
Yeah, I would love to send a whole bunch.
All right.
But I really have about one or two that are really so excited and meet the needs. And uh-huh. What I would, if I had my rathers, I'd go slow to go fast. Mm-hmm. I'd have good success with one person and then try and replace that one on a semesterly basis. And if it grows with everybody, who could be more happy than me?
Mm-hmm. The kids.
But, I have one really good person right now who who wants to come over on his bicycle right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling him, wait a minute, Nick, wait a minute.
We might get you paid out of this. I think it's a great idea, too, but I thought we're talking about two, because you've got one, and you've got one that wants to come back this summer, right?
The high school?
Yeah.
High school student,
yeah. We're still need to figure out, you know, if you look at, say, like for a fiscal year, there's going to be a lab, you know, a high school intern or two during the summer part time. So maybe that's one FTE or 1.2, something like that. Then, you know, we may get a lab intern, you know, part time. So maybe, you know, two FTEs based on a bunch of part time schedules. We need to kind of talk that out internally still, but I don't think it'd be more than two full time equivalent FTEs. Yeah. And we provide the workers' comp insurance,
yeah, of course,
for them,
yeah.
And it'd just be a flat hourly rate. They wouldn't accrue any time off, or I think they'd get sick time under new state law, but they wouldn't accrue any leave or get any agency benefits. It'd just be, you know, a dollar per hour wage. But we'll figure out the details and bring it to the finance committee, mm-hmm, of FTE equivalents and what that annual cost would be, and see what the committee says. But I wouldn't see it being more than two full time equivalent for the year. And that might be like, you know, six people, you know, part-time different times of the year.
I know a bunch of people currently who are students at chemical engineering at Davis and several other schools. Well, their big problem is they're graduating and they have no experience other than school. So to be able to do this for these kids is priceless. And to be able to do it with an institution that's within RJPA in San Rafael, It's really a gem that nobody knows. If you have a chance to go to their cafeteria, it's really cool.
Which one? It's my wife's favorite restaurant.
At Dominican. It is. It's
brilliant. Just to be clear, I said the priceless. I heard 15 to 22.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay, well, is there any more comments or discussion on the topic?
I'd like to make a motion.
Sure.
Okay, I would move that we give direction to the general manager to put together an executive committee to determine a budget for this and to bring that budget to the finance committee. But barring that we should approve this compensation package for interns. And I'd encourage almost a dual one. I really would, but I leave that to you. You run the shop. And that is, I mean, there should be some high school program, and there should be a separate, I think, college program. But again, I would leave that to you.
In terms of compensation?
No. I think you should be working on having a high school kid in here, you know, kind of floating in regularly and work on and having a high school kid, like actively trying to get a high school person and actively trying to get at least...
Oh, that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we're planning to have, you know, high school interns all through the year, more so during the summer when they have more time. The way it works out with their schedules, they're not able to come to the agency until after 2 o'clock. And, you know, most of the staff leave by 4.
Yeah.
So if they're here for maybe a couple hours... at most.
Just out of curiosity, Chris, at College of Marin, do they have any kind of a operators program like you're talking about at Santa Rosa JC?
Santa Rosa JC is probably the closest to North Bay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, could I ask the general manager, Doug mentioned the executive committee. What's your vision of implementation on this?
The executive committee?
He proposed an executive committee in his motion. I didn't see that in the staff recommendation.
Oh, that's just, we have, you know, the senior managers here and me, we're our executive team. So when I said the executive committee, I just mean I'll bring it to our senior management group and we'll kind of do that thinking about the FTE equivalents over the year. So it's not a special group.
So that's consistent with the motion.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll second the motion.
Can I hear what the motion is? I got a little confused at the end of it.
Let me try it again, because I may have forgotten it now. I'm asking that this board give direction to the general manager to proceed with a plan formulated by the executive committee to bring to the finance committee a financial plan with the thoughts that this board would move forward on those internships.
And also, you're recommending the compensation range.
Oh, yes.
The board has considered.
I am agreeing with
$22.
Thank you. Absolutely.
But it'll come back here after.
That's right.
After finance.
Final
approval.
It'd be incorporated into the budget, unless the board wants a separate item to discuss it. Wow. Or it'd be just part of the budget discussion.
I'd personally like to know how much money we're talking about before I approve it.
Oh yeah, we could have it as a separate item, or it'd be just part of the budget discussion where we highlight that separately for the board. Either one, whatever you guys, how you guys want.
As long as it's not a done deal.
Oh yeah, yeah. We bring it to the committee. So today, the way I'm looking at it is the board says the concept is fine, the salary range is fine. You work with your group to come up with an annual cost, put it in the admin budget, bring that to the finance committee for review, and if the finance committee accepts it, then that'd be a recommendation to the full board as part of the FY 2020 budget.
Great.
And then each year, you know, if the program expands, and maybe we have like three students, you know, full-time during the summer, we would bring that to the finance committee the next year's budget with maybe an enhancement. So I see it could evolve possibly.
Yeah, my main concern is that it doesn't get too big.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And become an administrative burden on staff.
Do I agree? We'd make sure we're tracking on that. Yeah. We want to have, we're, you know, it's going to be a little work for staff, but we'll utilize the interns as a resource so they can do some work. Yeah, but I agree. We don't want to have so many people here that we're just training all the time and not getting the regular work done.
Or 100 apps.
So we'll avoid that. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and second. We need to vote.
Just a second.
All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I am thrilled. And I'm sorry I had to step out. My phone call did come from my anxious mother.
Okay.
Not my personal one, but a student has been in crisis.
Take care of the crisis.
And so I had to talk to her to be sure everything was under control.
Both students.
But thank you so much. I look forward to working with you guys. And I know my student's going to be a thrill.
Thanks, Ben. Bye-bye. See you.
Okay, item 5 is the revised annual budget financial policy, and this is a recommendation to approve the revised annual budget financial policy.
Jason. Okay, thank you. So we inadvertently didn't include the OPEB funding worksheets with the agenda, so I emailed that out separately, so hopefully you all got that, and there's handouts for you. So this has been updated slightly from last month, and I'll talk about that in a moment. So as you recall, last month the board approved the OPEB funding plan concept, and the plan had three major elements to it. One was to fund the OPEB trust fund, which is a separate trust fund with CalPERS, until we had a certain amount of money based on our projections in the spreadsheet here, to then begin funding the annual operating expense for retiree medical benefit costs. And then over 20 years to have a certain amount of money left in the account, which was approximately $2.2 million, to continue paying. And that's the primary objective. The second objective of the plan was to avoid overfunding the trust fund. So the board approved that, and as part of the action, they said, go ahead and revise the annual budget financial policy to include the OPEB funding plan. So that's what we have for the board tonight, and it's the attachment, policy number 550, and I added, you know, all the changes in red text, so just kind of walking through this. On page 1, unrelated to the plan, is the policy said we have an annual budget, but as you know, in the email I sent out recently, our finance committee is agreeable to present to the board a 2-year budget for fiscal year 20 and 21, first time we've done that in probably about 20 years. So I revised it to say an annual budget or biannual budget. So we can include that in the policy, so we have the option in the point in the future. So under procedures, remember last year to comply with the response that we gave to the grand jury about funding our OPEB plan, we included the third bullet under the procedure. So then we just added this red text here to say we'll fund the OPEB. Well, we'll budget for the OPEB contribution pursuant to the plan. So we tied together there. And on page 2, we added the red section that's in the budget development, part B. And that's just saying that the annual actuarial determined contribution really is two pieces. It's comprised of the actual payment to the retirees for their benefit and the contribution to the CERP trust. So we call the contribution, we actually call the net ADC, because the bulk of it is used to pay for the annual expense for the retiree benefits. Then we added this new section 5, which is a description of the funding plan. So we just talk about what it is, we talk about what the objectives are, and the three components. So there's the funding component, the eventual use component, and then adjusting it based on the annual monitoring. So as we mentioned last month, what our plan would be is to take a look at the worksheet every year before we develop the draft budget for the two-year budget when we're looking at adjusting the second year of the budget, and just take a look at the assumptions here and make any adjustments, then present that to the Finance Committee, get their buy-in, then that'd be part of the annual budget document. So always have an updated version of this, and then discuss and present any adjustments to the plan to the board when discussing, you know, the draft and the final budget. So that's what we've incorporated into the financial policy. And that's my staff report. I could answer any questions you have, or note any comments, or if you have some suggested revisions, we can make those happen too.
I reviewed this, and I only have one comment, and that is on item 5 with regards to just the second paragraph and the specificity to this attachment that's included into a policy, which this is an ever-changing, you know, document, and it's, if it's going to be part of the policy, we're always going to have to be updating this policy for this worksheet. So I was seeing if maybe we can consider just striking that paragraph or modifying it to take out attachment 1.
Yeah.
And just basically saying we have this plan, it includes this, and this, and we look at it every year, and we get the new ADC, and we adjust accordingly.
Sure. What we can do is we could strike out the reference to the attachment, well, the statement here that's attached, remove that. In the second paragraph, remove the reference to attachment 1, and then take out maybe the last sentence, which has a very specific $2.2 million in 20 years. Then the rest of the second paragraph, the remaining part of it, I would probably keep because that explains what the objectives are.
Sure.
But we could make those revisions, and that's a good comment because this will be part of the budget. It'll be an attachment to the budget, so we'll always have, you know, a current version of it. Then we'll be looking at updating it to bring it to the committee, putting it in the next budget. So we'll always have a copy of it readily available. So it doesn't need to be part of the policy because we definitely don't want to have to update the policy every year.
But it's clear where to go to see the explanation.
Yeah.
In that part of the budget.
Exactly.
And we can reference the annual budget process in this policy. Like that's where we sort of get the specificity of the numbers.
Yeah, we could add to in the plan adjustment. Mm-hmm. We can say the original and any adjusted plans will be included in the annual budget or the agency's adopted budget. We can add that reference there to tie it together. Mm-hmm. Does that sound good? So we can strike those sections and then add that additional language. Okay, I'm just putting some notes here.
Any other comments?
Yeah, we spoke at some length about this earlier in the week. Michael and I sat down with Jason, so I'm fine.
I'll move the staff recommendation.
Second. As amended here?
As amended.
Okay, all in favor of approving the revised annual budget financial policy?
Aye.
Okay, great.
Item 6, 2018 California Water Environment Association State Awards.
So CMSA is in the Redwood Empire section of the California Water Environment Association, and that section is one of 17 in the state. It includes all the wastewater agencies that are in Sonoma, Napa, Marin County, some in Solano County, and some in Mendocino County. And every year, each section has an annual awards competition that all of their agencies can submit. They have a big list of different categories, and they can submit, you know, awards for their organization, for regional activities, or you can nominate individual staff members for certain awards, like mechanic of the year, laboratory person of the year, things like that. So it's kind of a real competition. They have a, committee that reviews these applications and make selection. So CMSA, you know, we were pretty excited that for 2018 we received 9 awards for the section. Now, when I presented this to the board in January, we had only heard back about 8 of the awards. Since then, we also learned that Amy Huang, who's made presentations of the board before, she received the Young Professional of the Year award. So that was pretty cool. So we were excited about that. And then, you know, all of those award recipients then get elevated to the state level competition where they compete against the award winners in the other 16 sections. So we're pretty excited. Also, we received the email notifications from the CWEA, you know, state, you know, committee that we received 3 awards. And they're listed here on the staff. The first one's for Mary Jo Ramey for the, well, she's our public education outreach person. She does a great job at that, so she got first place. And then we also received first place for engineering, you know, research or achievement program of the year. And that's for our power delivery program. And we've talked about that a lot about that in the past. And then we received third place for the cooperative countywide, you know, wastewater public ed program. That's where CMSA is a lead agency, and there's 5 other agencies that participate. So yeah, so those are the awards, and the CWA is having their annual conference starting tomorrow in Palm Springs, and several of our staff usually go to this event. Chris will be there, and I think Mary Jo's going to be there, so they'll be receiving their awards on behalf of the agency. Then next month, I'll probably have them sitting here so the board can see those. But anyways, yeah, so we're pretty happy about this and just wanted to highlight the good work of engineering staff for the program and for the public ed staff and also for Mary Jo.
Please convey our congratulations.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
All the board.
Okay. On to item 8, the primary clarifier gate rehabilitation project, recommendation to award the construction contract for the primary clarifier gate rehabilitation project, Department of PM.
We're moving so fast, I'm just not taking notes quick enough. Okay, I'm caught up now. So as you recall, back at the February meeting, the board accepted the construction contract documents for the primary clarifier gate rehabilitation project and authorized us to go out to public bidding. So a few days later, you know, we went out to public bid, you know, standard way we do that. And we opened bids on March 28th, and we had a couple bidders, which we thought that was great. And the low bidder is Bartley Pump, who's done work at the agency before for a couple small projects. And their low bid was $419,000, $419,500, which is within our budget, which we were pretty excited about also. So staff's recommendation is to award the construction contract to Bartley Pump. And the scope of the project is we have, I'll be quick. So we have these 7 primary clarifiers. 5 were original and 2 were constructed as part of our wet weather expansion program. The two newer ones have these gates that you open and close to modulate the flow into the tanks, and they're controlled with electric actuators. The original 5 have hydraulic actuators controlled by a central system. So we've always thought about, you know, replacing them with electric. And then we did the condition assessment work, which was part of our master planning. The consultants also recommended you should probably move to electronic here and tie into your process control system. So we included that in the budget. So the scope is really to replace the hydraulic system for the 10 gates on the 5 original clarifiers with electric operators, and then bring all the electrical, you know, systems to them, conduit wiring, junction boxes, tie them to breaker systems, and then bring the instrumentation to our process control system. Then separately, our staff will do the process control system programming for different types of strategies when these gates open and close fully, partially, based on flow or other parameters. And so this project was designed in-house by our engineering staff, so they'll be doing all the construction inspection and construction management activities for the project. So our recommendation is to award the construction contract to Bartley Pump.
You said within your budget, or your estimates, it's 18% lower.
It's the budget was $436.4
million. Okay, budget, and then the okay, so yeah, our own estimate was above our budget.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to commend your staff for doing the wise decision to put this out with the actuators in there for competitive bidding. Because he came in some time ago with, not only did we standardize on a sole source item, which sort of, as we found out, pumped the price up, but when we just went out to buy them again, we decided to put them out for competitive bidding under the contract, and lo and behold, they came in a lot cheaper.
$100,000 less.
Yeah.
That probably makes sense in a way. I mean, first off, government agencies get screwed a lot. But, you know, it's also because in my business, I do the same thing. If I sell you five of something, it's going to be one cost. If I sell you 5,000 of them, so our vendors are buying more of these than we are. Let them buy the stuff.
It hasn't been built yet. The bid is $100,000 less.
Yeah.
True.
The
cost of just the actuators came in significantly lower than when we went out.
Yeah, let's keep an eye on these.
I understand, but you know, the proof is in the.
Sure. It's a good start out of the gate, though. 18% low. Excellent job.
Dan, I've seen this movie before.
Question?
Yes.
Since I'm new and moving so quickly through this, I thought I'd take the opportunity to just get a little more information.
Sure, sure.
So if the budget is $436,000,
yes,
and the bid amount, which presumably will be the contract amount, is $419,500, does the difference end up going into like a contingency? And do you have authority to spend up to the budget for change orders and things like that?
Yeah, so the balance in that particular budget account will be there for other potential project expenses, specialty, you know, inspection services. If we need to bring a electrical engineer in to make sure that, you know, electrical testing is done properly, for example, or if there's change orders. So we only have a small amount of money left in the budget for that. But we do have the ability to transfer funds within the fiscal year from other capital accounts that we're not going to spend into that account. So we have that. In regards to change orders, we do have a financial policy that delegates a certain level of change order authority to the general manager based on the value of the project. So for this project of $490,000, my change order authority for a single change order is $41,000. It's 10%. But say there was, say, for example, the supplier said, oops, you know, there's a clerical error on that quote. It's really $80,000 more. And the contractor can't do anything about it. You know, he comes to us with this change request and say we approved it. Well, that's outside my signature authority. So then I would, if it impacted the construction schedule, then I'd probably go to the board chair. We'd talk about it. He said it's okay. We'd authorize a field directive for the contractor to do it. Then we'd come back to the board and just ratify that decision. But if it didn't impact the schedule, then the expectation and the policy is then I'd come back to the board at the next meeting, discuss the item, and get the board input.
You do give us the change orders, even if they're within your check writing authority, though.
Most of the time, we'll just handle them, just because a lot of the change orders do impact, you know, either the critical path or one of the subcritical paths within the big critical path. And because our board only meets once a month, that you can't usually wait, you know, that long because the contractor needs an answer or something's not going to get done. Then there's delays and there's costs associated with the delays. So that's why we wrote that change order language that way, to avoid any potential, you know, administrative delay costs by the general contractor or any of their subs. But we tell the board in the oral report, we brief you guys what's going on. Yeah.
So you always tell us.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. I thought you were going to buy it to you. Okay, sorry.
Because we always hear about the change orders.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's a preference.
Oh, yeah. Definitely got to keep the board informed.
That's for sure. Thanks.
Sure.
Any other comments or questions?
No, I would move. Let me get to that item. I'd recommend awarding construction contract for the primary clarifiers Gates Rehabilitation Project to Bartley Pump PM and authorize the general manager to execute the contract agreement.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, you're still taking notes.
I'm caught up, I think.
Thank you. This is a recommendation to approve the revised personnel policies and procedures manual.
So in closing, your agenda packets is this fun reading material, and it is our personnel policy and procedure manual, which has rules and benefits and regulations and other great stuff that helps us guide our organization on the straight path. And this manual is reviewed every 3 years by staff, and we bring proposed, and there's always some changes, some are minor, some are significant. We always bring it back to the board for review and discussion. So our process is that we'll take the manual, we'll take a look at it first, we'll give it to our employee law attorney, they'll do a very thorough review to verify that it's in compliance with state law, or if something's changed over the last few years, they'll know what the changes are and what we need to do in terms of adding provisions, modifying provisions to comply with state law. Then they have lots of other suggested, you know, revisions and comments and edits just to improve the document overall. Then we bring that back, and our executive team reviews that. Maybe there's other changes that we want to make to align with current practices. These maybe changed over a few years. Maybe there's some of the kind of more discretionary comments the attorney has that we need to say, oh, we don't want to do that. Ultimately, it converts to a second draft. Then we give that to the representative employees union, and we kind of highlight what all the changes were, you know, ones that are, you know, worth noting, and give it to them and say, would you guys like to get together and talk about this, propose questions, meet and confer on it? And they usually want to meet and confer on it. So we just completed that process a couple of weeks ago. And this is really the first time that they didn't have any real proposed changes.
Really?
Or any comments.
That's
they had a few questions which we addressed, but we had like five items on that agenda for that meeting, and I thought this would take most of the time, and this was like a 12-minute discussion, which was I thought that was wonderful. Anyways, so I kind of highlighted what the noteworthy changes are in the staff report by policy number. So I could go through that with you, or I could answer any questions. But the recommendation is to accept or to approve the revised manual. If that's done, we'll finalize this, we'll file it, we'll put it on the website, distribute it internally to, you know, internal stakeholders. Then each department manager will review what the significant changes are with their staff, so everybody's kind of up to speed on it.
Any comments, questions for the general manager?
It didn't really occur to me until we spoke. You know, I was mentioning to you, Jason, in our meeting on Monday, that we did this recently at Ross Valley Sanitary, and so we had the whole new revised policy, and at the end of the meeting, the clerk of the board came and gave right in front of me a whole new copy. I'm like, this copy in my book. And she's like, no. This is the one you have to sign, because you have to follow these policies and procedures now. Interesting, I didn't know that the board is not considered employees of the board.
The agency. Yeah,
of the agency.
That's
so
correct.
We don't have to follow any of this stuff. Really?
Well, it's a good idea to follow the legal policies, like no unlawful harassment, things like that. Yeah. Yeah, but this is primarily for staff.
Okay. No, I'm just saying that some boards are members of are considered employees and some aren't. So I just
sure.
Clarify that. No, the changes seem fine if the employees are fine with them and the management's fine with them. I reviewed them with you, and as did Michael.
You know, one thing I did mention when I met with you guys is that when I was reviewing this initially with the attorney comments, mm-hmm. I also had Ross Valley's recently adopted manual, which is almost identical. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was a coincidence or not. But anyways, so I went through policy by policy.
Oh, really?
And looked at, you know, if you guys had, you know, the format was different, or if there was something that made a little more sense. And I actually incorporated some of your policy, you know, ideas into this policy. Not ideas, but some of the content into ours, in terms of rearranging certain things. So that was really helpful, too.
So you can voluntarily just do everything.
It's the timeliness part. I'm usually late, so, you know, there's no dock on my pay for...
It took 5 years to review that policy manual. There really was none 5 years ago. There was no HR person 5 years ago. Mm. That did not bode well at that time.
No.
A lot of what happened.
Well, good job on getting through a potentially contentious issue very smoothly and
well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Being able to just
It was great.
Get the job done. It's not the most entertaining subject matter. But
I'll move the staff recommendation.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Great. Excellent.
Moving on to item 10, April's informational items, report by the general manager.
Normally I don't really have any discussion on these, just for information. So if you guys want to ask any questions or have a discussion on any of these items, you can definitely do that. Just a lot of good letters of support for certain legislation and opposition for one that's really troubling.
Is there a difference in what you handed out?
Yes, the second side wasn't included in the original.
Signature page.
Signature page, yes. It's on two of them. C and E. So, I'm sorry?
That's the same on E?
Yes.
Yes, C and E both needed the second side, so you have those now.
Yes. So, I just happened to notice that one of them seems like if it moves through the legislative process could be quite troublesome for us and maybe some others. So will you continue to watch this and what recourse do we have when it comes to these types of things if it looks like it could really be trouble?
So you're referring to Senate Bill 332?
Yeah.
Senate Bill?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, the whole wastewater community and any, you know, water agency or county or city that has a wastewater aspect of their business, they're all tracking on this and they're all opposing it. And either other associations like the Association of California Water Agencies, the California Special District Association, the League of Cities, the Associated County Organization, they're all opposing this. So we have a strong coalition. I'm on CASA's, which is our wastewater association. I'm on their board, and I'm also on their state legislative committee. So this is one of the priority pieces of legislation that our staff's focusing on for this year. So this, like this opposition letter that's attached, that was a template that they prepared that we kind of customized. It's like all the dollars and impacts of CMSA in there. Those are from, you know, our consultant helping us a couple of years ago on a similar type bill by Hertzberg that got, you know, a huge amount of opposition, and it died in committee. So then he picked that bill up, and he modified it. And he brought in the water districts to be part of it also. And he added, you know, a pretty hefty fine section to it if you don't comply. But in terms of, you know, compliance with this, you know, for a lot of agencies, this is applicable to ocean and bay and estuary dischargers, not inland dischargers. But if you fall in one of those categories, you know, like we do, there's no way that we could reduce our annual, you know, volume treated and discharged by 50%. Really ever, especially not by 2030.
Short of instituting like some sort of wastewater recycling program, right? Like piping that back out.
Yeah, like this example we have. I mean, there.
We could pipe it to Nevada.
Is that the wiener on the
yes.
Same wiener?
Yes.
One, I guess, the double housing.
Yes,
I think so.
So double the housing and half the discharge. Is that, how does that work?
That's wiener. That makes perfect sense to me.
That's a wiener.
Did you talk to the MCCMC, Marin County Council Members and Mayors Association?
No, I don't. I don't really have a relationship with that group.
Well, they're in the California legislature. I'll ask Alice Farmers, who chairs that committee, if they sent out a letter. It would be nice.
Yeah. If they like, they could have kind of CASA's template letter. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they have their own, you know, letter that they're. That their wastewater, you know, organizations have sent out.
When does this get decided on?
Sometime this year, probably.
You know, I think that today it was being heard in Hertzberg's committee. So yeah, that, you know, that means it probably moves out of his committee, right. And then it's I think next 16th it goes to the Judiciary Committee. And then if it passes the Judiciary Committee, it goes to the Appropriations Committee. And then if it passes out of Appropriations, then it goes over to the Assembly. Then it has to go through the Assembly's, you know, Policy Committees, Assembly Committee, Appropriations Committee. And if it passes all of those, then it goes to, I think it goes to the Governor. So there's a lot of steps for us to, you know, be involved and to go and advocate on behalf of the association and all of the members, and just really educate, you know, everybody that's tracking on this or on these committees, you know, that the intent of the bill sounds great, but once you try to figure out, is it workable, is it feasible, how much is it going to cost? Like you saw in here, you know, we're looking at a $210 million project to have an advanced treatment system with a pumping facility and a big pipeline to take it to, you know, I think the estimate was over to Lake Lagunitas, where it would be used as potable reuse under the category of surface water augmentation.
That's which a nice name for it. Need right now.
Direct injection into Lagunitas, or you'd run it down the hillside and perk it in?
You know, the plan would be right into. There's four different categories of potable reuse. There's groundwater recharge. There's surface water augmentation. There's raw water augmentation, where it goes right into like the water treatment plant. Then there's treated water augmentation, where it goes right into the distribution system. So there's no groundwater in Marin County, really, so we don't have an opportunity for groundwater augmentation, but we would have the possibility for surface water augmentation, and that's really upstream of the reservoir, to a creek or something, or right the other end of where the plant is. So you have that environmental buffer there.
Can I ask you, I understand the groundwater augmentation, because if I recall, you know, when I was getting a tour either here or at Moss Valley Sanitary, talked about, you know, after 4 feet in groundwater, you know, water is naturally treated to a great extent.
Sure.
I don't understand how putting it in a creek upstream of a lake is, I mean, tell me in a short sentences, because I'm stupid, how that's not just polluting. Why would you just put it in the ocean? If you had two choices, it seems like putting it in a big ocean makes more sense than a little lake. Am I missing something here?
Isn't the intent to reduce water waste?
That's exactly right. And discharging it to the bay or the ocean is considered wasting the water. But if you use it, if you put it to a source where it could be a potential potable water source, you augment the water supply.
So we're assuming it's clean agriculture.
Okay. See, normally you'd say, well, geez, why don't we just treat it to tertiary standards and use it as a recycled water system?
Right.
We have too much salt on the influence side of the facility to where we can't produce, you know, the tertiary Title 22 water without enough salt in it, that it really limits the landscape uses, because a lot of plants couldn't tolerate the salt level.
So like having electrolytes?
Yeah. So you'd have to have, you know, various, you could have reverse osmosis on that to remove the salts. But that's one of the key steps in the advanced treatment. Remember I brought you around before a state ledge committee, I think it was maybe 2 years ago, we were in Sacramento, and there was a kind of a little mixer that was hosted by Orange County Water District, Orange County Sanitation District, and they have this partnership where the secondary effluent from the sanitary district, about 100 million gallons per day, goes in a pipeline underneath the freeway or to the water district, and they treat it with their advanced treatment system, and they pump it like 16 or so miles up to, you know, these spreading basins where it goes. It supplements the groundwater. Then downstream, the water district pulls the water out of the ground. And there's regulations on how you can do that. Remember, I had some bottled water here for the board, sitting here as I hand them out, and Michael picked it up and drank it. That was great.
Since I started this. So I trust then that if this bill gets legs and it looks like it's moving forward, in the event that you want to feel that we need to take some further action on this, you would bring it back, you know, and maybe we'd ask you for a full analysis of what the, you know, ramifications are or something like that. But if it was of major concern to this district, financially or otherwise, you would bring it back.
I'd keep you apprised if it got through the Senate, through the Assembly, and the governor was considering it. If the governor actually signed it,
that's too late.
Our bond issue would be a lot bigger.
Right.
We might even hear about it before today.
So usually these things make it out of all the final process before it ever approached the governor's desk. This is somewhere around October and November.
Governor has to sign all bills by, I think, September 30th.
By September.
Okay. Yes, so we're talking June, July, August, we'll know whether this thing has any traction.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. We'll keep the surprise.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Move on to item 11, the North Bay Watershed Association report.
So, for the past number of months, they seemed like kind of a silly exercise at the beginning, but the North Bay Watershed, which has been in existence for some 30 years and growing, never really had a strategic plan. And so they had a number of strategic planning sessions, and it's a little bit seemed like a big game, but they really put it together. And this is just the draft proposal. And when they bring it back to us, we will all get copies of it because we're members. And it's actually pretty interesting. The idea is one water that has little bitty agencies peppered all over the North Bay. We don't have much of a voice in what we much influence, but as the North Bay Watershed, which consists of all of us, it's actually a pretty decent little voice that we got up there in Sacramento. So it's an important thing that we're here, and we talk about lots of things that are going on in the North Bay, because you know what happens up there flows down here, and you know. We're all one area. Anyway, I will get us all copies of this when the real thing becomes available. And the last meeting, they discussed the February floods, which were quite devastating in the area. What happened in Guerneville.
Sebastopol.
There's not a whole lot you can do. We keep on building in places that we shouldn't build. But that being said, there was a big presentation on what they did in Napa. They got permission to build a bypass, and it's from the Oxbow over here, and then the river comes around and winds underneath Napa. And it's a beautiful river with lots of waterfront restaurants and cafes now. And there's a whole section which during the summer they have musical events and parks and skateboard parks. And they actually used it for the first time this year because it's a bypass. And when the water gets high enough there in the river, it actually bypasses straight through there. And Napa didn't flood this year. Through all of that, and so they had lots of pictures, and when those pictures become available next time, I'll try and bring them. But it was really quite amazing, and they showed here's what it looks like, you know, when everybody's using it and is all happy. To here's what it looked like in the bypass with kayaks going through there, and it was it's really well thought out project where. Rather than just having the water rush through it, it's engineered so that there's concrete drops to slow down the flow of water as it goes through. And this year, during even the most massive of floods in February, they didn't flood Napa. So that was the first time that that's really ever happened. Sonoma Water, I don't know if you heard about this, but they flooded very badly up there, and I'm not sure which treatment plant it was, but the access to the treatment plant for 3 days was non-existent. And there was one poor operator who spent 3 days there eating whatever food was available in the refrigerator, but there was no way in and out of access to the treatment plant. So there.
Keep the refrigerator stocked during rain season.
So that was the North Bay Watershed.
Thank you.
Okay, item 12, oral reports by the commissioners or general manager.
Just a handout here, just a few things to highlight. One is So Marin Airport contacted us, and they have a contract with Marin Transit Authority where they, you know, provide the bus service. And he asked if we had some available land possibly to park some buses on, you know, 12 to 16 buses. So we had a conversation about it, and I said, well, I'll talk with our board chair about it. And I did that this morning, and Dean said, well, let's put it on the agenda for May so we can talk about it, you know, at the board level. So I contacted Mr. Laporte, you know, this afternoon and said, we'll have it on the agenda. So he's going to come by next week, and we're going to talk about, you know, lease costs and space they would need for their bus drivers for the buses.
The nice thing about that also is that those bus drivers are all drug tested, background checked, everything that we would need to have them be a known entity to be coming into this restricted area over here. And some extra income on a piece of property out here that's, you know, that we don't use currently.
Yeah. Did this come from our conversation with you some time ago? When did they call you?
I brought it up with him.
When did they call you?
Larry called
Monday.
Yeah, Monday.
When did we close on the...
Well, that would be another informational item.
Yeah.
Is that the Ross Valley Sanitary District, just a little teeny bit of history. We operate out of four places right now. We have our headquarters. We used to operate out of here. Many years ago, I don't know what happened, but it was unpleasant. We did bad things.
And we have Kerner building.
Then we purchased the Kerner building over there, which is we own outright. We have our operations out of the Larkspur Landing property, which, by the way, we have full EPA approval now to do the remediation on the site and clean it up so that finally, sometime in the future, we'll be able to do something with it. And we have a warehouse over here on Anderson. We rent, and we have a board meetings at Central Marin Police over on Doherty. And all best practices of collection systems is that during a flood or a storm event like we've had recently, where you got to have everybody together in one place because communications became our greatest challenge. And so for a number of years now, we've actually been doing a facility study to try and figure out what exactly do we need. There was a time several years ago, some people on this board may remember, that we actually came to Jason and said, you know, what's the possibility of we build a facility right here and actually move in over here? And the problem is we may have to do some nutrient removal sometime in the future and need that space. And it would be a bad news if RVSD. So we could only get a promise of, well, we'll give you a 2-year lease. And so that, anyway. Long story short, we purchased a property which is right up the street, which is the old Comcast building.
It will rain the Comcast building.
Hmm?
They're tenants.
They are tenants now of the Ross Valley Sanitary District. We don't need 28,000 square feet, but they need half of it, and they need parking. And we have enough parking, and we will use the other half, and in either 4 years when their primary lease, if they don't exercise their options, they have up to 14 years there. But it does raise the possibility sometime in the future of maybe doing some functional, I know Corte Madera was, Larkspur was looking for maybe some place to have some space to park some vehicles. You know, this would be a place that it's in a... This, that
our plan is to share, to see how we can share services with other parts of the community, both wastewater, sanitation, and otherwise. So, for example, when he was talking about Larkspur, it was Larkspur Public Works. They wanted some space. That would be fine. So we've talked about our board meeting, carefully kind of naming the building, not the Ross Valley Sanitary building, but something, you know, to be inviting to the other organizations and districts. And I know that San Rafael San, I believe... Don't you lease some property? I think you do, even though you bought some. I think you're still paying rent. I think that's what Mary Beth told me.
I think we should call it the $1,000 toilet bill.
Doug had talked about the Doug Kelly building.
I thought that would be nice, yes.
That's not
well, well, we'd have the Doug Kelly, you know, executive offices or something. Anyway.
So anyway, that event did happen, and...
The reason that we brought that up is, to quote, sort of paraphrase Princess Di, at one point there were three people in that marriage. And so I was interested that Marin Transit suddenly came looking for a different avenue.
No, that was not why.
Right.
God, I felt like I was almost at one of your board meetings.
You're welcome, Bill.
So did what Ross Valley Sanitation District do somehow affect Marin Airport? Because you're getting
a request from Marin
Airport for some space here.
No. Okay. People are buying for parking.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay, and I've known the people at Marin Airport for a long time, and it seemed to me that this might somehow be a decent fit. For we have this space, it's probably going to be maybe available, depending on what everybody thinks here, for several, two, three, maybe, who knows how long. But it's 2 acres over here?
Well, the courtyard's, you know, 1 acre.
1 acre.
And then we need to reserve, a portion of that for potential nutrients.
Yeah, yeah.
Facilities in the future.
But you're going to figure that out and come back to us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it just seemed to me that, because we had even thought maybe we'll park some of our vehicles over here, and we've been talking about that, but now we're going to be able to park our vehicles over there. And I mentioned to the people at the airport, I mentioned to Jason that, could there be a symbiotic relationship where they'll pay for rent? It'd be good for the agency, but I don't know how much rent goes for on parking spaces.
$80 a space per month was what
you like the idea. Huh? Yeah. You like the idea.
Guys, if this is coming up on an agenda next month.
Yeah. So,
that's good. Point well taken.
Yeah. That's how it came about.
Okay.
It's a very small community.
Okay, the last two quick things is, you asked me last month to hire a contractor to do the peer review with the cogen system pre-design. We've done that. We've hired Black & Veatch. They'll have the peer review done by the end of this month. We'll give the findings to Corollo. We'll incorporate anything needed into the design contract that will come to the board in June. And the peer review is $14,600. And then tentative, so May agenda items, the business items, will have a power monitoring presentation, which should be pretty cool. And we'll have our draft 2-year budget. We'll have the results of the regional chemical supply contract bid opening. We'll have this Marin Transit Authority, consideration for property use, the board to discuss. Then we'll look at possibly forming an ad hoc committee to look at property space and needs assessment for the agency going into for long-term future needs. A small piece of that would be looking at the value and the use of the hillside that the board brought up in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Thank you. Okay, our next scheduled meeting is Tuesday, May 14th, 7 o'clock. This meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kate.